नमो तस्स भगवतो अरहतो सम्मा संबुद्धस्स। नमो तस्स भगवतो अरहतो सम्मा संबुद्धस्स। नमो तस्स भगवतो अरहतो सम्मा संबुद्धस्स। धम्मचारी सुखं सेति अस्मिन् लोके परमेच्छ। Welcome back, everyone. I've been given the task today at this part of the celebration of the Buddha's 2600th birthday. It's 2600 years ago the Buddha was born. Now this, we have to understand what it means when the Buddha was born. It doesn't mean that 2600 years ago the prince Siddhartha came out of his mother's womb, because that wasn't the birth of the Buddha. The birth of the Buddha occurred under the Bodhi tree 2600 years ago. And this is what we're here to celebrate today. The way a Buddhist celebrates, the way Buddhist people should celebrate, should be in accordance with the Buddha's teaching 2,555 years ago on Vesak, when the Buddha said, Yo ko ananda, bhikkhu wa bhikkhuni wa upasaka, upasako wa upasika wa, dhamma nu dhamma patipat, Patipanno Anudhammacari So Tathagatang Karukaroti Sakaroti Karukaroti Maneti Pujeti Paramaya Pujaya. You see, that's the Pali. What the Buddha said 2,555 years ago is that the way to pay homage to a Buddha, the way to celebrate the Buddha's teachings, is through the practice of the Buddha's teachings for the purpose of realizing the truth. Dhamma nu dhamma patipanno, patipatiya. Through the practice of the Dhamma, the truth, in order to realize the truth. This is how we pay proper respect to the Buddha. So this is the topic I'd like to give today. Topic of the talk I'd like to give is on one who lives by the Dhamma. Instead of simply paying respect to the Dhamma with flowers and incense and food and gilanpasa, one who actually pays respect to the truth, to the Buddha's teaching, by putting it into practice and by living by it. So it happened that in the Buddha's time, one of the monks had heard about this aspect of the Buddha's teaching, of a type of person that was called Dhammavihari. Dhammavihari, Dhammavihari, he said. How is one known to be a Dhammavihari? What does it mean to call someone a Dhammavihari? He came and asked the Buddha this. One who lives by the Dhamma. How does one come to be called one who lives by the Dhamma, by the truth? Lives in the truth, lives a life of truth. And the answer that the Buddha gave is found in the Anguttara Nikaya, for those of you who like references, in the Yodha Jiva Vagga of the Panchaka Nipata. So the Buddha gave an answer with five parts. The way the Buddha answered questions was not always direct. If someone says, what is a Dhammavihari? He wouldn't always say, this is a Dhammavihari. Sometimes he wouldn't even answer the question if people gave questions. Sometimes he would ask a question in reply. He would say, well, what do you mean? Or so on. Or, do you understand this? And so on. And sometimes he would explain something else first before he gave the answer. Because he knew that if he gave the answer directly, the person wouldn't understand it. So in this case, he gives several examples of different people that exist in the world. He said, well, in the world there exists many different types of people. And in this case, many different types of people who undertake to realize the truth and to live by the truth, to live a life of truth. The first type of person is someone who studies the teaching of wise people, studies the Buddha's teaching, studies all of the teachings that are directed towards realizing the truth and understanding reality. In this case, the Buddha studies all of the suttas, all of the gathas, all of the various parts of the Vinaya, the sutta, the Abhidhamma, maybe studies the whole thing, could even memorize the whole of the Tipitaka, all of the Buddha's teaching. And then he thinks to himself, well, that's a good thing that I've done. I've come to study all of these wonderful teachings, and they're such wonderful teachings. Someone who studies them can't help but feel amazed by all of the great wisdom that's contained therein. But the problem is that once you study these things and you remember them, you think that you own them. It's like a person who looks after other people's cows. Eventually, you forget that they're not your cows. And you start to think that very proud of yourself. Look at these people come up and say, look at these beautiful cows, and you feel very proud. Yes, my cow. There's an example of this in the Buddha's time. There was this woman, I think this was the story of Sirima, if I remember correctly, but please don't quote me, I have a very terrible memory. Anyway, this woman, I believe her name was Sirima, and she listened to the Buddha's teaching one day, and she came to understand it. And if I remember correctly, she became a Sotapanna, which means she realized Nibbana. And as a result, she didn't have any interest in the home life anymore. She didn't have any real interest in sensuality or in her home, in her husband. But she had great interest in giving dana and listening to the Dhamma. But the problem was her husband wasn't enlightened, and he was very demanding of her time. He was a nice man, but quite demanding of her time. So she made a deal with him once. She said, look, this really doesn't interest me anymore, but if I get you a surrogate wife for 7 days, will you give me 7 days to give dana and listen to Dhamma and keep sila just for 7 days? And her husband was a simple man, and so he agreed. And so they found this woman who was, I guess you could say, a prostitute. And she became the mistress of the house for 7 days, a very strange thing to do. And after 7 days, she came to think that she was the wife. She came to forget herself that after 7 days she would be leaving. And she became very jealous of Sirima, and she actually tried to kill this woman by pouring butter, hot butter, over her head. And Sirima looked at her as she was ready to pour the butter, and she said to herself, "If I have done anything bad to this woman, may I be killed or disfigured by this butter. But if I haven't done anything wrong, may I not be harmed." And she sent metta to the woman, and the butter fell on her head. I don't know if you heard this story. Fell on her head, and she wasn't harmed. The butter turned to cool. And the butter cooled immediately as it touched her skin through the power of metta. But the point is, we give rise to conceit in regards to things that aren't ours. And we do this with the Dhamma because it's a very precious thing. We study the Dhamma and we think, this is mine. Now I'm living by the Dhamma. Anyone asks about the Dhamma, I can say, Yoko ananda bhikkhuva bhikkhuniva. I can give the Pali gathas. When we have the monk meetings, I can chant the Patimokkha. I can do all these. I've learned and studied all of these things. I've been through that. If someone asks me about this or that, I know all about it. And so this person, the Buddha said, lets the days go by. Diva sangati nameti. It means lets the days and nights go by without doing anything more, without actually practicing any of the things that one has learned. Studying even the Abhidhamma, and you know, all of the 121 citta and all of the cetasika, but never actually practicing to see them for yourselves. They don't go and find the Buddha said, they don't go and find a quiet place to meditate. They waste all of their time talking and socializing and so on. And the Buddha said, this is not a dhamma-vihari. No che dhamma-vihari. This is called someone who is pariyati bahulo, someone who is full of knowledge, full of study. Someone who has studied a lot. I don't know if you all know the story of Tuchapotila. Does anyone know the story of Tuchapotila? Tuchapotila was a monk in the Buddha's time who studied all of the Buddha's teaching. And he memorized it all. He memorized all from... And not only in this Buddha's time, but they say in 7 different Buddhas, he memorized all of the Buddha's teaching. 7 different times. So he thought quite highly of himself indeed. He thought he was the master of the Dhamma. Certainly someone worthy of praise. So he went to see the Buddha and he thought, I'll go and sit by the Buddha and it'll be like the king and the prince. Everyone will come to respect him, and then they'll see me and they'll want to respect me. And the Buddha will say great things about me, and it'll be just wonderful. So he went to see the Buddha, and the Buddha saw him coming and said, oh, here comes that empty book. This is Tuchapotila. His name was Potila, book, or palm leaf manuscript, Potila. And the Buddha said, oh, empty book. Like useless book. And what? And he thought, maybe I heard wrong. So he goes and he bows to the Buddha. Oh, look at how empty book bows to me. And he sat down and he said, there's empty book sitting over there. And so then he talked to the monks, well, look, here we have empty book and Sariputta and Ananda. And he's like, why is he calling? He was quite offended, actually. Quite embarrassed, and so he turned red in the face and he got up and, oh, empty book, you're leaving. And he walks away, oh, there goes empty book. And then he ran and he went and he was so ashamed. And of course, it hit him quite hard at that point. He realized what a fool he had been. He realized that he was an empty book. He had nothing, he'd gained nothing. The Buddha said, like a person who looks after other people's cows. They don't get the milk, they don't get the butter, they don't get the ghee, nothing. All they get is some kind of salary, but they don't get to enjoy the fruits of the milk of the cow. And so he realized that he actually had to put this into practice, what he had learned. It's funny, no, how we can study. I remember hearing about in Europe, when Buddhism came to Europe in the beginning, they had societies, Dhamma societies, where they would sit around and discuss the Buddha's teaching. It never occurred to them to sit and meditate. Isn't that amazing? I find it amazing because I knew nothing about Buddhism until I practiced meditation. But I can understand if you didn't have a teacher, how you could look at it as some kind of literature. Maybe even you analyze the literature and you say, oh, this stanza is like this, and then you say, oh, now you see how they put together the Buddha's teaching. If you read about how they talk about the Buddha's teaching in Europe, they say, this part came first, then this part, and this is later, and this is not even authentic, and this is dubious. It's so funny to hear because there's so much good things you could be practicing, and here you are wasting all your time writing books and getting money for them, and all these people who translated the Buddha's teaching, but they did it for money. They didn't do it because they cared about the teaching. Ah, well, I can't say that. But I think many people were very happy about the Buddha's teaching. But it was only an intellectual happiness. They never actually found the bliss of meditation. So Tucha Potila was of this sort. And then he realized his fault and he went to practice meditation. First he found this big head monk. And he asked him, he said, please, please teach me meditation. A very famous monk. And the monk looked at him and said, oh no, I can't teach this guy. He's got too much conceit. He thinks he comes to me, this big teacher, because I'm the only one who's fit for him. He said, no, no, you go, please, I'm too busy. Go talk to the vice abbot. So he went to the vice abbot. The vice abbot said, no, there's that monk over there. You can talk with him. And down and down and down. And none of the monks would teach him because they knew he was this big teacher. You know, when you have to teach people who are very famous and very well respected, it can be very difficult. Until finally, there was no one left in the monastery except for one 7-year-old novice monk. And they said, go see that 7-year-old novice playing by the pool, by the water. And he was like, but he was at his wit's end, and it really had an effect on his conceit. So he let go, and he went to the novice and he said, please teach me. The novice goes, what are you coming to me? I'm a novice. Please, please teach me. And the novice looked at him and said, the novice was an arahant, actually. He was enlightened. So it wasn't in vain. But he was still a child. He was still 7 years old. And so he had an interesting way of teaching Potila. And he said, well, I'll teach you, but you have to promise. If I'm going to teach you, you have to promise to do exactly what I tell you. If I tell you, if I'm going to teach you, you have to do what I say. No buts. And he said, yes, yes, fine, no problem. And he agreed probably too quickly because the novice then said to him, hey, go run into the lake. And he's like, what? Into the lake with you. Wearing all his robes, so he starts taking off his robes. No, 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 don't take your robes off. Go, go, go. Running into the lake with all of his robes on, getting all wet. And he said, okay, come out, come out. And so he comes out and, okay, go back in. Go in, come out, go in, come out. Can you imagine a novice abusing a monk like this? Terrible, really, but wonderful in a sense. And so then when he's in the middle of the pond, the novice says to him, okay, suppose you have an anthill, a termite mound. You know these termite mounds? In Asia, they have big termite mounds. In Canada, we don't because the termites wouldn't survive here. Nothing survives here in the winter. But the lizards, they like to eat the termites. So a lizard will go into the termite mound and eat the termites. If you want to catch the lizard, You know, people like to catch the lizard, I guess, to eat them. If there's 6 holes in the termite mound, what do you do to catch the lizard when it goes in? And so Tucha Bodhile, he's in the middle of the lake, the middle of the pond. Maybe he's treading water, or maybe he's drowning, or whatever. And he says, well, you plug up 5 of the holes, and you watch the 6th one. And when the lizard comes out, you catch it. It's only got 1 hole to come out. And the novice said, this is how I want you to practice. The termite mound, this is the body. The 6 holes are the 6 senses, the eye, the ear, the nose, the body, and the heart. And I want you to close up all 5 of the external senses and simply watch your mind wherever it goes. So he thought about this, and he thought, okay, this is practical teaching, and he started looking at his senses. So when he saw something, he wouldn't follow it. He stopped following this after things he saw. When he heard something, he stopped. He just watched his mind instead. Instead of going out after the seeing, hearing, watched his mind, and his mind would like it or dislike it, just in the way that I explained to you. And right there, he became an arahant, just by watching his senses. This can really happen. I saw in a case once where a monk was explaining this. He was explaining about the 6 senses, and just as he was explaining, he went into cessation. This is something very powerful. It's simply through the practice of something so simple, watching ourselves, we can come to change who we are and free ourselves from our clinging and our craving and our ignorance. So the point here is, simply studying things doesn't make you the master of them. Not until you put them into practice. There can be great hypocrites. I could be sitting here telling you all this, and then I go back home and fall asleep. I say, okay, there was a monk once who did this. He said to everyone, practice, practice, practice. And so they went to practice, and then when it got late, they would practice. He went and slept. When it got late, they wanted to go to sleep, so they all went back to their kutis. He woke up at around, you know, midnight or something, got up and saw that they weren't practicing, went and knocked on all their doors and got them up. Go practice, what are you doing? And so they're like, you know, they're trying to get their rest, no? And they go out and practice, and they're all falling asleep. And then at 2 o'clock, they go back to sleep, and he comes and knocks on their, he goes and falls asleep. 2 hours later, he gets up and knocks on all their doors. And they think, wow, this guy's really extreme. They think he's practicing all night. Until eventually they go and they peek in on him, and they see he's sleeping 10 hours a day or something. So it doesn't do for us just to study. This, the Buddha said, it's not one who lives by the Dhamma. The second type of person is one who, after they study, they go and teach other people. They're not content simply by studying the Dhamma, but they teach it to other people. They teach people how to do meditation, they teach people all of the different teachings, they tell them stories, they tell them examples, and they explain things in detail. But they don't practice themselves. They also let the days go by. They don't seek out private, secluded areas. They don't find a quiet spot to look at their own minds. Instead, they're always concerned about other people's mind. What are you thinking? You're not meditating properly, like I said. But actually teaching. And I got another story for you about this one. In the time of the Buddha, there was another monk. I think it was in the time of the Buddha, or in ancient times anyway. And there was one monk who was a very good teacher. So good that none of his students went without some kind of realization. Some of them became Sotapanna, some of them became Sakitagami, some of them became Anagami. They all attained to some level of realization of the truth. But he himself didn't practice. And so one day, one of his students, who was an Anagami means someone who doesn't ever come back. When they pass away, they go to the Brahma realms. And from there, they become perfectly enlightened. And he had some magical powers, so he could read the teacher's mind. Which is a scary thing when your students can read your mind, no? You have to be on. He didn't know it. He didn't know his students could read his mind. Otherwise, maybe he would have been more careful. So a student comes in and he says, wow, this is great what our teacher has given to us. I wonder what he's gained out of it. And he thought he sent his mind out to his teacher, and he saw that the teacher was still a putujana, a person who had nothing, who was thick, full of defilements. No, he was a good person, but he still had all of the micha ditti, the wrong views and conceit. He said, oh, I can't let this go by. I have to help our teacher. What can I do? So he went to his teacher and he said, teacher, can we have a lesson now? And what he meant is, I'm going to teach you something. But the teacher said, oh, no, I have no time for lessons now. I gave you lessons before. I have so many people who want to learn, and they have to go here and there. Today it won't be possible. I have no time. And so the student, he sat down cross-legged. He went into the jhana estates and he floated off the floor. And he opened his eyes and he looked at his teacher and said, you don't even have time for yourself. I don't want your lessons. I don't want your teachings. How can you be a teacher when you don't even give time for yourself? And he flew out the window, believe it or not. Can anyone here do that? If you fly out of the window on me, I'll go and practice like this teacher did. Because when he saw this, he realized that this is shameful. To be a teacher and be telling people this and this and this, and you yourself have no clue. You yourself have not realized any of it. So he left. He stopped teaching. He gave all his students up and went to practice meditation in the forest. And he practiced and practiced and practiced and practiced, walking, sitting, all day, all night. But this is an example for all of us that we should never want anything too much, not even to become enlightened. Because the more we want something, the less we appreciate what we have, the less we appreciate what's right in front of us. In the case of enlightenment, you can never become enlightened when you're clinging to some idea of getting. No, he just wanted to become enlightened because he didn't want people to, you know, because he was afraid of what people would think of him. He wasn't ready to become enlightened, so he got nothing out of it. Practicing, got nothing. But he was so famous that everyone was trying to come and learn from him. Even the devas, even the angels. So in this deep, deep forest, the people couldn't find him, but the angels could easily find him. And they were practicing along with him. When he walked, they walked. When he sat, they sat. When he got fed up, they sat down beside him. And he was so dejected. He couldn't see the angels, but he thought he was all alone. And he was so dejected that he started crying. And suddenly an angel appeared beside him and started crying as well. And he looked and he said, who are you? Oh, I'm here to learn from you. I'm here to practice with you. So why are you crying? Well, I saw you crying. I thought that must be the way. No? Isn't this some new practice that we have to do? Oh, this teacher was so embarrassed. So that hit him really hard. And they say after that, then he really practiced and became an arahant. Moral of this story: teaching other people doesn't make you one who lives by the Dhamma. No che Dhamma vihari. This is a panyati bahulo, one who is able to instruct or to give examples or to give teachings. A third type of person, they may not teach, they may teach, but they do a lot of memorizing or chanting. And This one I think we find quite often in the world. I have many students who come to practice meditation with me and they ask me if it's okay if they do chanting, and I say, well, how much chanting do you want to do? And they say, oh, just a couple of hours of chanting. I think, well, why can't you do a couple of hours more of meditation? Oh, no, this is my practice to do the chanting. I even have people who say, I don't have time for meditation. And, well, when you say I don't have time, there's many, many reasons for that and many things we can point out. Because there's 24 hours in one day, and so it doesn't have to involve chanting. You can do chanting as well, but if you can't find a half an hour to do meditation, well, count it up. How many hours do you sleep? Maximum 8. You know, 8 is pushing it. I don't ever reach 8. But you know, here in the jet lag, I'm at about 3 or something. But if you hit 8, okay, so subtract 8, you've got 16 left. 16 hours. How much are you going to work? Maybe you work 8 hours, 10 hours. Subtract 10 hours, you've got 6 hours left. How much are you going to eat? How much are you going to go to the washroom? How much are you going to check Facebook? Check email, check telephone, watch TV. If you can't find a half an hour to meditate, then I think there's something wrong. But some people, they've told me that they still manage to find time to do a half an hour, an hour of chanting, but no time for meditation. And I think this is with the correct understanding that chanting the Buddha's teaching is kusala kamma, because it certainly is. But you can't possibly believe, if you study the Buddha's teaching, that somehow it's anywhere near the kind of kusala kamma that you get from actually practicing the Buddha's teaching. Right? Is everyone busy practicing right now as I'm talking? You know, I forgot to mention that you're all supposed to be meditating right now. Everyone's doing it anyway, I don't have to tell you, right? Sitting there meditating? No. When you listen to a Dhamma talk, you know, in the Buddha's time, they would become enlightened when listening to the Dhamma talk. If you're just thinking about what I'm saying, and that's it, you'll never become enlightened. Or if you're putting bracelets on your friend's wrist, hairpins. It's sort of a substitute of meditation for meditation. No, you'll never reach that. And on top of that, it'll be a lot of suffering. You might find it quite difficult to sit here, even though you think, well, he's saying some interesting things. But still, to sit still is quite difficult. Maybe you'd rather fluff your pillow up, stretch your legs out. That's fine, please stretch your legs out. It's no problem. But much more important is to look at why you're doing all of that. What's going on in your mind that's causing you such discomfort? We're not able to sit still. We're not able to be comfortable with reality. We always have to find some illusion to chase after. Maybe it's the television, maybe it's the computer, maybe it's the telephone. Got lots of good illusions in this day and age that we didn't even have in the Buddha's time. And I think chanting is somewhere in between, because chanting isn't specifically a meditation practice. And if you don't believe me, this is the words of the Buddha that we have. The Buddha said, "No je dhamma vihari," this also, a person who chants the Buddha's teaching. Maybe it's a disappointment for some people. This is not one who lives by the Dhamma. Simply chanting, chanting, chanting doesn't make you one who lives by the Dhamma. Chanting is beneficial, and it can actually be a type of meditation practice, but it doesn't help you to see the truth. It doesn't help you to understand the truth. In fact, during the time when you're chanting, You can also be meditating. If you focus on the feelings of your lips moving, the sound of your own voice, you can turn it into a meditation to see things as they are. But simply doing lots and lots of chanting. This Buddha said, this makes you a satyaya bahulo, one who is full of recitation, who likes to chant a lot. They're still considered to be letting the days go by. They haven't seeked out the secluded area, secluded place. Rinchati patisala, nang the Buddha said. They throw away the opportunity to be alone. A chance to look inside themselves. They have this great opportunity and they throw it away. Rinchati. They abandon it. Even people who do chanting, the Buddha said. So that's three. The fourth one is someone who thinks about the Dhamma. And this is, I said, these societies that they have where people sit down and think and spend lots of time in discussion about the Dhamma and, well, what do you think about this and that, and ask all sorts of questions. People are always asking me questions. I get questions and questions on the internet. And they ask a lot of funny questions. So I set up this forum where they can answer each other's questions. And I will answer some. This is what I do. I teach on the internet, so people, if they ask a good question, I will make a video response, put it on YouTube, and then they can watch their response. And this is people like this. And it helps me because I don't have to answer a lot of the more philosophical or speculative questions that really just lead to more thinking. So the Buddha said, even if you just sit around thinking or discussing the Dhamma, this is also Note Dhamma Vihari, this is also not someone who lives by the Dhamma, this is Vitaka Bahulo, one who thinks a lot. So the Buddha said that a person who practices the Dhamma, a person who lives by the Dhamma, listen up, no? Everyone, let's live by the Dhamma, okay? Just for we have 20 minutes left. I'm going to teach you how to live by the Dhamma. I think we already got some good teaching in the morning on that. But everyone close your eyes. Put your right hand on top of your left hand. Just like the Buddha, no? Where's the Buddha? There, you see? Well, there's a big one over here. I think they can see better. Oh. I have a funny story about Mahavira. When I was in India, I saw a statue and I went up and bowed down. And then I was looking at it. He's naked. That's not the Buddha. Because they look very much alike. Yes, so you have to be careful in that way. But okay, he's a better example because I don't know, is this one meditating?
Yes.
Okay.
I can't see it. Except from the bones.
Okay. Well, whichever one you can see, the point is to put your right hand on top of your left hand. Cross your legs if you can. If you can, there's no problem. One leg in front of the other. Close your eyes. There are four aspects, four qualities that make one a Dhamma Vihari, one who lives by the Dhamma. The first one is na rinchati. Na divasang atinameti. He doesn't let the days go by. A Dhamma Vihari is someone who takes the moment, takes the opportunity that they have. What is the opportunity that we have? We have the opportunity to be born in the time that the Buddha Sasana is still here. In another 2,500 years, there may be nothing left. We might not have anyone to explain the teaching. We might not even have any teachings left. Even now, it's very difficult for people to access the Buddha's teaching. We don't speak Pali. We don't speak Sinhala. Maybe we have some translations, but still, it's very difficult. It's getting harder and harder for us to hear the Buddha's teaching, let alone practice it. It's not going to be around forever. Here we've wasted 2,600 years. Wasted it. We should be ashamed in a sense. But on the other hand, we should be very gratified that we have this opportunity. And the Buddha said, Gano voma upacaga. Don't let the moment pass you by. These are the Buddha's words. You ever heard that? Don't let the moment pass you by. It's the Buddha's words. We have an opportunity not only to meet with the Buddha's teaching, but also to be born as human beings. Because if we were born as worms, we'd have much harder time sitting in meditation. We have the opportunity to be in good health. We aren't being afflicted by sickness. So we can sit in meditation. Sometimes we can't sit cross-legged, but we can sit in a chair. Some people can't even do that. They have to lie down. We have to teach them lying meditation. And our mind is working. No, we're not a person with a mental handicap or impairment. We're very lucky to have this opportunity. Because we don't know when we are going to get sick, when we are going to get old, when we are going to die. No one knows when they're going to die. But now we have this life. And more than that, we have the good fortune to be interested, to actually meditate. Some people, if you tell them to sit cross-legged, they're like, well, yeah, whatever. And they sit there playing with their cell phone or their hairpins or something. No. We have this great opportunity where we actually, our minds are willing to, are interested in developing ourselves, making ourselves better people. Many people are not interested. They don't care if they become a better person or not. So this is the first aspect, that we don't let the time go by. Here we have the opportunity. Even while I'm talking, don't let the time go by. There's many things happening inside of you. Maybe you feel hot, maybe you feel cold, maybe you have pains or aches. Don't let them pass you by and give rise to anger and frustration and boredom and wanting this, wanting that. Now you have a way to deal with them, to understand them, to see them for what they are. So say to yourself, pain, pain. Or if you feel hot, say hot, hot. Or feeling, feeling. If you're thinking about this or that, thinking, thinking. Or if you want, you know, a really neat one, when you hear my voice, just say to yourself, hearing, hearing, hearing. As I said to many of you last night, this is a great trick to play on your parents. When they tell you, when they start scolding you and saying nasty things, you know, why don't you listen to me? You can listen to them. Say to yourself, hearing, hearing, hearing. Just focus on the sound. And I tell you, it works wonders, both for your parents and for you. Because you don't have any frustration or anger at your parents anymore. You're just listening to the sound and you're happy. You don't yell back at them, so they can stop being angry and they'll be more patient. And you will feel happy to do the things that they want you to do. You won't see any problem anymore because you're happy. Why don't you take out the garbage? I told you 3 times. Hearing, hearing. And then you say, okay, Mom, I'll take out the garbage. No problem. You Before it would have been, oh, I'm going to my room and slamming doors. So you can do this when I'm talking, hearing. And it doesn't mean you won't understand what I'm saying, because you'll find if you do it, you actually do understand what I'm saying. But more importantly than that, you are here and now. You're not somewhere else. You're not, oh, this is boring, I want to go home, when's tea? You're here and now. So this is the first one. The second one is narinchati patisalanang. They don't discard or give up their solitude. They don't go running after society. So the Buddha's teaching is really best practiced alone. And this is great, because alone is really one of the horrible aspects of our life, no? How horrible it is to be alone, right? And they say, someone sent me a message once, said, I'm alone and I feel alone. And it was like, it was as though he was saying, and I'm going to kill myself because of it. And I was like, you know, wow, great, good luck for you. You get to be alone. But it's very difficult for us to be alone, and we fear it. So this is one part of our life that we can fix, we can change. Now we have something to do, something important to do when we're alone. We don't realize it, but the greatest happiness, the greatest peace in your life will come from when you're alone. But the point here is not to always be alone. The point here is not to seek out other people and their issues and their problems, and try to satisfy yourself with your relationship, in your relationships with others, to try to find happiness outside of yourself. Your point is to try to find peace and happiness within, to make yourself a better person, so that whoever you are with, if you're with people or not, you will always be at peace and in harmony with the world around you. The third aspect, quality that makes someone a Dhamma Vihari, someone who lives by the Dhamma. The Buddha said, anuyunjati ajatang jeto samatang. They develop internal composure of mind. Looking around this room, some people are very composed internally. You can see. And some people are not. I'm not trying to judge. When I started meditating, I was the worst of the bunch. But think to yourself, which way is better? To be calm in mind or to be agitated in mind? The first thing you'll learn if you're a person who is easily agitated is how much suffering there is in being agitated, right? Just sitting here, having to listen to me talk and having to be here and not being allowed to run away with your mind and think all the wonderful things that you want to think. How much suffering it is. But then you look at someone else and you see how happy they are and how happy they can be anywhere. How happy they are here, how happy they are everywhere. How for them, they can be happy anywhere. And then you realize that the problem is not because you're here, it's not because of this situation. The problem is because you can't accept reality. You can't accept things as they are. You can only accept a part of reality. So when you get the things you want, you're happy. And when you don't get the things you want, you're unhappy. You can't ever be at peace. You're either chasing after something or you're running away from it. Always back and forth. This is the bad news. The good news is there's a way out. There's a way to change. This is by focusing your mind, by calming your mind, taking one thing at a time. Don't jump so much. When you experience something, try to experience it fully. When you're just focusing on the stomach, rising, falling, or even sitting. When you have pain, realize the pain clearly. Don't run away from it. Pain. When you feel happy. When you're thinking, liking, disliking, drowsy, distracted, doubt. Realize it fully. Don't run away from it. This is what it means to develop composure of mind, internal composure. And the fourth quality, the Buddha said, is uttarincasa panyaya athang pachanati. This one is an interesting phrase. Pachanati means to know clearly or thoroughly or fully. The higher meaning of the Dhamma that you've studied with wisdom. A Dhamma Vihari, this is the key. A Dhamma Vihari is someone who comes to understand the truth of the things that they've learned, the truth of the Buddha's teaching. So they do study. They may study all of the Buddha's teaching. It's a great thing to do. But then they come to practice it. They are not content simply with book knowledge. Uttarincasa panyaya athang. The atta, the knowledge, the meaning, the higher meaning they come to see with wisdom. This is what the Pali means. The meaning of this phrase is that we come to see the truth of reality, the truth of life, the truth of ourselves, the truth of suffering, and the cause of suffering. We come to see what it is that's causing us suffering. We come to see that our minds are the source of all of our problems. The Buddha said there is no worse enemy than the untrained mind. And if your mind is untrained right now, you probably can agree with me. It's a lot of suffering, no? Oh, I want this, I want that. There was once a cartoon, someone drew a cartoon of a meditator with a bird's nest up here and little baby birds going cheep, cheep, cheep. He said, that's what the mind is like. Always wanting more and always, give me. Can you imagine being the mother bird having to feed all those birds? Baby birds. But the good thing is, the Buddha said, there's no greater friend than the trained mind. So if we train our minds, and we can train our minds right here and right now, right in front of me, you can close your eyes. Rising, falling. Train your mind to see things as they are. And if you do this, your mind will become your best friend. Better than any friend. No friend can do as great things for you as the trained mind. Your friends, they can give you food and they can give you comfort externally, but they can't bring you peace of mind. They can't bring you true happiness. Only you can do that for yourself. So the Buddha said, these are the four qualities that make one a Dhamma Vihari. And then he said, now monks, there are the trees, the roots of the trees, there are the empty kutis, the forest dwellings. Now we don't have any of these here. But what do you mean the sunyag sunyagara, the empty rooms. We have this. And he said, Jayata, meditate. Don't be sorry later. Don't be sorry later when it's too late, when you get old and you're lying in the hospital bed crying like my grandmother. When you're dying, when you lose your loved ones and you can't bear it, when you get sick, when you have an accident and you can't deal with it. Don't wait until that time comes. Train yourself now and make yourself an island. Make an island for yourself that no flood can overcome. This is the Buddha's teaching on what it means to be one who lives by the Dhamma. So this is the talk that I was asked to give today, and one that I'm happy to give any time. I think it's quite useful for us. I'd like to thank you all for being as patient as you've been. I know you're much more patient than I was when I was your age, most of you. So I thank you. And I wish for all of you to be able to take this teaching and to gain something from it, that by it you're able to realize what it is the truth of the Buddha's teaching, what is the true and proper way to approach the Buddha's teaching, that you're all able to progress in the Buddha's teaching and find true peace, happiness, and freedom from suffering for yourselves. Thank you very much. And